Welcome to Boiling Point, the podcast to motivate ever-evolving entrepreneurs and forward-thinking movement pioneers. Our hosts, filmmaker Greg Hemmings and executive coach Dave Vail, are turning up the heat in the world's business communities. Our interviews with entrepreneurs, thought leaders, and movement makers are raising the temperature of inspiration. Live from the hottest studio in this quadrant of the universe, here are Dave and Greg.
All right, we are back in the Boiling Point. What do you want to call this, Dave? It's kind of like a hybrid episode today. It's the Boiling Point meets the Shifting the Employee Experience episode. This is kind of like an episode 0.5 right now. Would you agree, Dave?
I would. And we're actually just responding to the times. We are doing this virtually. Greg on the river just outside of St. John. Me on a different river.
Actually, I just happen to be at where the St. John River, the Muddy Wollastook, and the Kennebecasis meet.
Okay.
My river is open. Your river is covered in ice.
Which it is still, yeah. And then Bill is from his apartment in Ottawa.
Beside the Ottawa River.
Beside the there we go.
So river boys.
Keeping with that theme. And we're working like everyone is working these days because of COVID-19 mm-hmm. and self-isolation. And we thought this would be a good conversation to have. Because, you know, actually, Bill, I was just reading an article you had sent me around the difference between isolation and loneliness at work. And this is something you know very well. And some of us are just starting to recognize the importance of understanding this. And I think it's, you know, this idea. There's one thing I just wanted to bring up before we get into that. But there's a concept that I feel is interesting in this. There's the social distancing, but actually I prefer what I'm hearing people call physical distancing, because in fact, I've never talked to my parents as much, you know, by FaceTime and stuff. So socially, we're actually more connected than we've been in years. But you know, yet we're creating this physical distance. So what's your take as a mental health expert, Bill, and what's happening right now?
Well, David, it's unprecedented, to be quite blunt. I mean, before the pandemic, before any of us heard of the word COVID-19, I've been starting to do some thinking about isolation and loneliness, and because my concern being is it's a major driver for mental health. We talk a lot around coping skills. We talk a lot around resiliency. Over Christmas, I was doing reading. I read four or five books on it. Kind of the penny dropped. I was having a really good conversation with a dear friend. We were in Victoria, and we were debating over the difference between isolation and loneliness. And it kind of hit me going, oh, you know what? Isolation is what you think. It's your perception. Now, objective isolation is if you lose your limbs and you're sitting in your bed and you can't get out of your bed. That's objective. It's very, very clear. Anyone would know that situation. However, that objective isolation, if you have people visiting, like my father when he was in the hospital on his deathbed, you know, he couldn't get out of his bed. He couldn't take care of himself, but he had his children and nurses and family. If you ask Dad, he never felt he was alone. Mm. However, the concept around perceived isolation, there are many different things that can result in perceptions of isolation. For example, financial, I don't believe I can go out. Work demand. I have so much work. I don't have time to do things. My age, I feel I'm discriminated. My multiculturalism, my job satisfaction, I feel trapped in my job. Psychological safety, I don't feel safe. And what's interesting is I've started to realize, David, that this isolation is actually compounded. It's usually multidimensional. It's not unidimensional. Usually people have all kinds of different levels. So I created a study with the Globe and Mail on this and started some articles before the pandemic serendipitously. And I wanted to start to try to find out what are the links between perceived isolation, resiliency, and loneliness. And I wanted to find out is employees in our Canadian workforce or that who experience high loneliness, what is their experience compared to employees that experience low loneliness? In terms that CEOs may understand in regards to attendance, presentism, because I thought if I could create a financial business case, we could get this on the radar and get more people talking about it. And what happened for me was this whole pandemic started to hit. I started to realize this concept of social connection is so important. And I'm going to give you a stat to get you two thinking about it. You both, David used to be a trainer and used to do a lot in physical fitness. And, you know, Greg, whether he likes it or not, his wife is a physician. So she'll be giving him some instructions probably around his day drinking, his different lifestyle choices. But in regards to him, you know, in regards to how he behaves.
Sorry, I wasn't expecting.
Well, listen, Bill is getting so comfortable with the Bowling Point throw culture. We do it in a loving way, you know, like that. It's totally par for course.
I don't know if he edited his own or not, but I wasn't expecting that. And that's part of my cabin fever. I just have these crazy outbursts of laughter.
Yeah, okay.
Well, thank you for that.
It's good. It's good to know that you're there. And now, if I can remember what the hell I was talking about, that would be good.
Well, but you're talking about us being having some awareness around like our physical.
Right. And so here's my point. You both know obesity is not good for you. Neither one of you have a lot of body fat, but you know obesity will kill you. What really got me interested is that a person with loneliness is 5 times as likely to have premature death than someone that's obese. And so it started to hit me that I started to look at how mental health, which is going to be the number one killer of premature death by 2030, a substantive factor is this whole thing around loneliness. Now, as we move into this pandemic, there is no set of instructions for people to know how to actually manage. If you read the research from NASA, NASA will be very, very clear. They're the experts in loneliness because they put people out in space for a year. And they actually know that the longer a person's in isolation, it starts to erode their mental health. And that's one of the reasons why I'm spending a lot of time, and I'm looking forward to having a conversation with you on things to insulate yourself against isolation. And because not everybody's isolated, we need to keep that in mind. I mean, there's those essential services for healthcare workers and people working at Walmart and people that are making, you know, toilet paper and food and et cetera that are trying to keep our country going. Even car dealerships have an essential service because they need to be able to maintenance cars to keep those people going to work. And then we have us that are non-essential or sitting home and working from home. And then we have a whole population who have been furloughed and laid off that now need to live with the concern, will they ever get a job? And they'll feel isolated and alone and worried, terrified. So the challenge is with this, and this is something for us to really dig into, is that if you sit here and we can be pragmatic about it, but the reality is that if this goes another 12 weeks, the average human being in Canada can't pay their bills after 2. So if you think about it, 56% of the population right now is a huge, huge risk. There's only a small percentage of us that can afford to actually live. So how long could I go? I'm probably good for the rest of my life because I'm 56 years old and I put money away for savings and I didn't go into the markets and cash is king. I've always lived my way that life that way. For most people, they're not you or me or Greg. And I think that's something we need to be mindful of, is that there's a financial impact in this. And then we're going to be living people for the next 12 months with the fear of getting COVID-19 until they get a vaccine. So people are going to be doing some behaviors. They're going to be ostracizing people. There'll be people that if someone has a sniffle or a cough in an office in the fall. So there's going to be this thing is not going to be just everyone objectively now is home in their apartment. They're self-isolating. They're non-essential. It's going to be the impact of the nuances of this. And this is like a major, major impact. And in fact, you know, I've started, because I'm in isolation myself, 10 days ago when I started a book. And the first chapter of the book is, within 24 hours, why did I decide to write a book? And because we're in it right now, this is, whether it ever happens again, guys, I wish I could tell you I know how this is going to end, but I've had to deal with my first suicide yesterday. There's going to be all kinds of issues that are going to be traumatic for human beings, and we need to have some humor in all this and try to get some people to laugh but we also need to make sure we give some people some tools so they can stay alive.
Good point. Rewinding to what you said earlier about the unpreparedness. Oh my gosh, it's so true. Like, you know, we've got a little bit saved, you know, but we only started doing that about 4 years ago, you know, as a family. And like just on my day-to-day account, I mean, like I probably could go for a couple of weeks, you know, but think about the businesses. Like we had a bunch of cash at the end of last year and then we had a really horrible year last year and we lost a bunch. That's the reality of a bunch of small businesses, you know, like how long can you float your employees for as a business owner? And that's what we're going through right now. We're trying to be very innovative. It's a full team approach on how we're going to make, you know, make the next X amount of months work. Cause people who buy our expensive videos are companies that can afford it and have cash and who are actively marketing. That's all slowing down right now. But man, what a good lesson on being prepared. And that whole concept of the nest egg that, you know, post-war generations fully understood, right? That my generation, we've never really gone through something like this before. So it'll also be neat to see how everything changes, how materialism changes after this as well, and how we become more careful with the decisions we make with our stores and our money and while continuing to keep the economy going. Yeah.
I would say to you with that, my response back is, I hope so. Isn't it interesting though, the 2008 with the financial crisis, what we learned about all these crazy bonds and all the things that we're doing around mortgage backs. You know, we said we wouldn't do it again. And then they started again. And so my question, Greg, is are we really going to actually this time learn?
Well,
you know what I mean?
My response back to that is the huge mistake of the bailouts of the banks. And like Wall Street bailouts showed, just like we're children, seeing how our parents act, you know, throughout the world, like, oh yeah, we can have a economic crisis, but don't worry, somebody's going to bail it out. We can print money. They'll bail it out. No big deal.
Yeah.
That's what happened there. Like nobody really, well, people did feel the hurt back in 2008, of course. Mm-hmm. But the bounce back was essentially a manufactured bounce back. And those big players continued to act the way they always have. Nothing really changed in that one.
I'm curious, Bill's opinion of like the psychology around, you know, how when we're in something, we really experience it and feel it deeply and say, I'll never forget this. Like I think of someone we all know talking to Dr. Mark Pelche about, you know, his example is he's a cardiac surgeon. And he would say, I have some patients that go through the experience and they say, I'm going to change my lifestyle. And they do. He goes, but unfortunately, and I don't know what percentage he had, but there was this high percentage to just go back to their old lifestyle. And I just wonder, is there something around our psychology that, you know, that buffers us from the reality that we went through doesn't help us make rational decisions going forward that we should be?
Yeah. To answer your question, Mark would tell you it's flip a coin, it's 50-50.
Okay.
So, because we had that conversation on the golf course one day, here's what happens is when we're scared, we're in our emotional brain. And most of us can remember the time where, if you were sick and you were physically sick and you were throwing up, and not with COVID-19, but you just had a flu and you're really, really upset and you're praying to God that you'll never do anything again. If you can get me through this, just, you know, like I'll do anything. I mean, just get this pain to stop. What we mostly, one of our challenges is most people, there's really three pieces of learning, David. Is the first, we got to get people through the crisis. That's step one. Then step two, we need to educate people. What did they learn from the crisis? And then step three is I need to start putting a plan in place. What's the challenge with that? In theory, it makes sense. Get through, educate, restart. The challenge being for people is once they get through this crisis, the real world will start again. All their other responsibilities will start, all the other static, all the other noise. And will they be able to say, oh, yeah, that exercise thing, I'll do it tomorrow. So from a behavioral economics perspective, people are much healthier in the future. Like today I'll have a pizza, tomorrow I'll have salad. Today I'll buy that case of beer, tomorrow I'll save. And so what happens is we continue to kick the can down the road. And I think one of the things that would be very helpful for us is that I would ask both of you, being it neat to kind of flip the table. If, you know, what does insulation what's this isolation mean to you two in your experience? Like, mm-hmm. you know, you both are really fairly comfortable and confident people, but you're in isolation right now. What's happening to you two? And has it started to sink into you yet the reality it may not be safe for you, your children, to be outside for a bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, good point. It's our family spent a week in Cuba and then came back, and we had no internet. It was lovely. It was total disconnect. And we got back and learned all about this. We immediately had to go into 2 weeks of quarantine. And that ended on Wednesday. That period of 2 weeks ended. But we are continuing to practice self-isolation like everybody else is. Fortunately for us, we've got a tight family unit. And 1 week of vacation in a small little condo in Cuba, if you can survive that as a family, that's pretty good. And then add another 2 weeks on top of that, and you're still doing all right. That's pretty good. Adding the interesting layer of doing daily business, I'm still as busy right now having, you know, sales calls and strategy meetings like constantly, but we still have a baby that is crying from time to time that I just have to do my part. Like, things are changing, you know, in the way the work at home bit has to change, especially with two working parents. Like I'm right now, my wife's on mat leave, so it's a little bit different, but for two working parents who are working virtually with kids at home, I can only imagine what that's like. So at the end of the day, we're making it work so far. We haven't got squirrely yet, but we're getting outside a lot as well. And working virtually, and the kids are doing their camps and music lessons virtually, which is keeping them engaged. How about you, Dave?
I to be honest, I feel like I'm more concerned about the people that don't have maybe. So we're you guys have been to our house. We're very lucky. We got lots of space. There's a lot. I'm built to work virtually. I've got a exercise. You know, I've got a gym in the house, so I'm able to get my exercise in. I've worked virtually all the time. So in fact, we've got more work than we ever had. We have kids that we have to, you know, and I'm married to an early childhood educator who set up a family charter essentially when it started, and here's how our days are going to go, except for Saturdays and Sundays. And there's a be up at a certain time and go to bed at a certain time. And in between, academic time, exercise time, outdoor time, all this kind of stuff. And it seems to be going quite well, but I do feel like for me, I don't know if you guys are experiencing this, but I have moments where I kind of go, oh yeah, like this is like, when's this ever going to end? And it's kind of this, almost this freaky feeling. Like I can feel a little, almost like a little panic, and then it kind of goes away, but it's because I got lots to do. So, but if I didn't have this, I'd be really concerned about my own, mental health. Because there's only so much you can do, like watching videos and reading, and you know what I mean? But that's my perspective. And I'm really worried about if I didn't have all these wares, I would be, I would be concerned.
It's interesting. Yeah. No, I think both of you, it's great for sharing. I'd be fascinated, though, for both of you in your heads, because most people do this without realizing it. So when do you believe you'll be out of isolation and be able to be normal again, if whatever normal is? What's your brain telling you?
What's the guess? I'm guessing, for some reason, July is hitting my head. And hearing Trump talk about getting the economy back going in the next couple of weeks, like he's dreaming. Or he could force that, and then this is just going to keep going. And the borders will continue to stay closed. It won't be good.
That's a good question. I take it. The data is saying late summer and maybe fall. I'm hearing that. My brain though wants to take it week by week because it's like running a marathon. When you start training and you got to run 40 kilometers, My brain doesn't work well thinking 40 kilometers, but I think, okay, well, we're going to do two and then two and then two, you know, and then eventually.
Yeah.
So that's psychologically how I'm dealing with it right now. So there's a, I think there's two sides to it. One is because if I, because I find it too depressing to think of that, but I think that is probably the reality.
Yeah. So you're giving actually some really, really good advice. Is one, I think, is, as Greg said, is have a picture in your mind of what it could be. You know, you're, and then you can back up to what you're saying, David, is, I do agree, one day at a time. I love the fact, again, you're showing some great strategies, what your wife is doing around insulating for isolation. Is routine is really critical. In NASA, one of the number one things they said is, hey, you need to have a daily plan. You need to have structure. You need to have your exercise. You need to shower at the same time, sleep the same time, make sure you're eating. The challenge you're going to see is people are going to start to, they're going to start to morph into work at home. You'll see people actually start working more hours just because they're going to be trying to do more. They're going to have what it's really important to unplug like you normally do. You schedule yourself to work 9 to 5, your 9 to 5 family time in the evening. It'll be very easy for people to be using work as a way to try to distract themselves and to hide. And thinking about it to your point of going a day, a week, a month, I'm trying to tell people in my video blogs I'm doing every day with the conference board is do day by day, and no one knows exactly what's going on. There are a lot of smart people going to be working on this, scientists and et cetera. And we don't know what they'll come up with. If you think about the amount of brain power and the trillions of dollars that are pointed at this, I'm going to bet on humanity that we're going to figure this out. I think what we've got to do though is to be braced. And what I would say to you is both to be braced, to have the expectation that April and May will be probably very similar to what they are now. And then maybe in June and July, if we hit the slope, we'll be doing more social distancing. We'll be putting more protocols in, but they'll be trying to encourage some commerce. We don't know, but the backbone of our infrastructure will need small businesses to be able to start to operate. The question is with the COVID-19, is that we still don't know yet, understand the disease enough. It's because it's actually starting to impact young people as much as it is old. And in the ICU, 50% of the people in the ICU are between the age of 20 and 40. So you need, if you don't have a ventilator, if they don't incubate some of these people, depending on how it is, you and I might have potentially already got COVID-19 and don't know. And so, I mean, hopefully we did, but there's a lot of people that are going to be asymptomatic. They'll never have any symptoms. So this is going to be a time, I believe, when they start to have this whole conversation around loneliness and isolation, is the perceived barriers that are putting people into that mindset. I really am trying to get people just to talk a bit about like what are their challenges and what's hard for them. And so, because we can't actually say it's normal because no one knows what normal is right now.
I think you're, I think it'd be good. This is a good place to tell people how to reach the blog, because, you know, this is something that can keep them updated. And I see it's at the CEOHSnetwork.ca.
Yeah, that blog will have all the links and connections. What we're personally doing, David, is we're doing a daily blog through the Conference Board of Canada. We're doing a weekly microskill through the Canadian Society of Engineers Free. We're doing articles, posting articles for people. And we're going to be offering seminars for managers on crisis, depression, suicide. Those things are going to sadly be things that are going to be coming at us as human beings start to try to cope. I'm doing a webinar in 2 weeks on, in 1 week on isolation strategies and how to cope. What you guys are doing are very much it. It's family, love, patience, tolerance, and being aware of what's going on. And I think the big thing is for people to realize is that you need to have some structure and you need to have a bit of a routine and stick to it right now.
I got a question about you know, so everyone, so like within your family unit, and so we're a family of five, different stages of life, you know, a toddler, a tween and a teenager, and then my wife and I being in our 40s with a three-year-old, imagine that. And I've noticed how we're all dealing with this differently. And there seems, and for me, at times, I feel like, you know, just look at it my way, because it'll be, and it's not fair to other people, right? And I can be seen, if I'm going to be really vulnerable now, I think I can be seen as minimizing how they're feeling, because I'm saying, guys, it could be so much worse. But that's just because that's the way I get through it. And I have to recognize that, like, that's not their way. Maybe it's my wife or my son or whatever. Any advice there, Bill?
Yeah, it's interesting. Before I do, I'll ask Greg a question, because him being a movie guy and making movies, which you're setting up as something really important, it's a really good coaching point, is about be careful what movie you're creating in your head and projecting on other people, is because you're running your story. And your story could actually have a negative impact on them if you're not paying attention to how you're editing it. I mean, in the movie making business, Greg, you must see where how you sometimes you can use imagery to kind of project what the outcomes you want. It can be good and it can be bad, I would think.
Yeah, lovely analogy. I think as a film editor, what I get a lot of joy out of is adjusting the emotional impact of a video just by the decision of what type of music I put under the images. You could have a shot of somebody, just one shot of somebody running really hard down the street, and you could have a real daunting, scary sound, and you're like, oh my gosh, what's chasing this person? Or it could be a triumphant song. It's like, oh my gosh, he's going to win the race. Or it could be something totally different. And just these small tweaks on how we put films together, you're right, projects me as a director or as the editor. It's like, I want to manipulate your emotions to the scene. I'm setting the tools, the landscape. I want you to be more than just entertained. I want you to feel something. And most filmmakers are trying to manipulate that. And that's not a bad thing, because if you watch a film, you are looking to be manipulated emotionally in a way.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say that in all cases, but we like to go see films.
You're suggestible.
Feel something. Yeah.
And that's the point, David, what you're saying, that I think that impact of us projecting can have the same power on another person. And to be careful what movies we're playing in our head may not necessarily be what the audience needs or wants, because this is not about being right. It's about being heard. And that's the concept around that whole idea around restorative justice, around ensuring you spend time seeking to understand how other people are having their experience without judging it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be, I think the family thing, guys, it's going to be a lot of lessons. Sadly, that's one of the reasons I just wrote an article with our friend, Dr. Van Busker, on increase in domestic violence is going to be on the swing. Child abuse, all these social challenges are going to get amplified because people are going to be on top of each other. And you all have your own, like we all like having our own anonymity and freedom. And when you start taking that away and people don't get a break, that could create more stress. And that's why the part of the isolation is being mindful. It's not just about you. It's right. The experience you're having with other people too.
That's very good advice. Appreciate it. I like how you talked about the movie and pulled Greg's expertise into that. It's true.
I also enjoyed the,
I have definitely got a triumphant song playing in my head and I'm running down the street and people are cheering on the side. The reality is it's an empty street. So this resource is excellent. And by the way, Greg, you may not have noticed, and Greg or Bill pointed it out, check on the right-hand side of CEO HS Network.
On the Boiling Point. Dave.
The Boiling Point. I'm seeing that on there, and I think that's very, very cool.
So yeah, it's a great resource, Bill. Thanks for sharing that.
We're honored to be part of that. And that's coming from this great sponsor we have, Workplace Safety and Prevention Services. So how do we want to wrap this one up, guys?
Well, I think, one thing we didn't really, like this is kind of a ad hoc episode in the middle of a number of our sponsored podcasts, shifting the employee experience. And it was just a timely opportunity to let people know that we've gone virtual with the podcast and that Dave and I are still full tilt with the Boiling Point, and we're really loving this season of Bill and Dave at the helm, speaking to such cool guests, and for me to really learn the technology. I'm having a ball, and like I just figuring out it's irresistible. I've got so many cool on here.
We're fortunate to have these sort of outlets. For people that are listening that don't, or employers that don't have, that want to help the people that are at home, Bill, some quick tips.
Yeah. I think a couple ones I would say provide right now, if there was ever a time to support your employees with mental fitness, would be the time. Helping employees be able to develop the discipline, like not only exercise, but what they can do. This was inside their control each day to help them keep their perspective of what's going on. That's one of the reasons why, for example, on that website, you'll see the links to the University of New Brunswick about mental fitness. I'm a big proponent of that. I think the other thing too is like journaling and keeping a log, writing out your emotions right now is not a bad thing. There's a lot of research that's suggesting you can be tracking your experience and you can go back and get some growth and some learning experiences from it. The one I said earlier, I can't keep talking about it over and over. Keep talking. And if you're struggling, like I'm in an apartment by myself in Ottawa with nobody around me. I'm having the exact opposite. I haven't actually had a conversation with a human being face to face coming up to 14 days. And it's odd not, because I'm always on airplanes flying and talking. And what I'm realizing even myself with it is if I don't keep my routine, get up and shower and follow my thing and do my push-ups and do my walk every day, and know what my purpose is, you can get lost in this. And that's one of the things that people need to understand. This is a moment in time. It's not forever. And just to be patient with this. I would also encourage people with the Globe and Mail. There's a free survey there we're doing that actually gives you a report once you're done on your isolation that gives you some insights on what types of perceived isolation. Because any type you already had is just going to be amplified. Like if you're in a relationship, for example, there's all kinds of people in marriages that are lonely, that the marriage becomes a barrier. So it's starting to become aware of those perceived things that are going on, because this big amplifier that we call isolation or the challenge of worrying about your health, that's another perceived barrier that people are going to be worried if they're in essential services. 14% of the people that are dying or getting really, really sick with this virus are healthcare workers. Mm-hmm. And so it's, you look what's going on in Italy of the number of doctors, they've lost over 20 doctors. So this is not for the faint of heart what we're going to go through. We have a lot of work, not only for people that are going to be in apartments like me or you guys stuck in our house, the what's going on in between our ears in regards to what we're doing every day to stay connected. It will be really, really important.
Wise words. Lots of work. I look forward to it. So on the show notes, we'll have hopefully all of these links that you've just described so people can get quick access and be able to have some control and at least some awareness. So thank you for that. Good work you're doing there, my friend. And this is so timely. So Bill or Greg, do you want to wrap us up?
I'm noticing some digital dropouts because this is another reality of the current times. Like my daughter right now is in her acting class on the iPad doing a bandwidth. So, you know, these are just interesting technical things we have to get around as well as we do things like podcasts online. But that's why I turned my video off just to save. But yeah, so thanks everybody for listening to the Boiling Point micro episode. It wasn't micro, but it's a 0.5 episode in between the Shifting the Employee Experience series, which we're so blessed to have amazing partners in the Workplace Safety and Prevention Services, as well as the University of New Brunswick. And a big thank you, Dr. Bill Howitt. Thanks for joining us for this episode, but also for all the ones we've had so far and a number coming up. Excited to see what's coming up next. And please do subscribe and share these episodes with your community. We appreciate that. And we look forward to continuing to serve up conversations. See you later, guys.
Talk soon. Stay safe, guys. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Boiling Point. Remember to rate and subscribe to us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Boiling Point Pod. To see more from Dave Vail, check out leadershipunleashed.ca or visioncoachinginc.com and on Twitter at Dave_Vail. And to catch up with Greg, visit hemmingshouse.com and at Greg Hemmings on Twitter. Thanks for listening, and remember, keep that pot boiling.
Hi, this is Candace Sampson, the voice behind What She Said. My show is your destination for stories that not only entertain, but also educate and empower. Every week, I spotlight strong female voices from across Canada, women who are changing the narrative and driving change. Don't miss out on these inspiring episodes. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon Music, or head over to whatshesaidtalk.com.
What She Said can also be heard on blasttheradio.com, Mondays at 5 p.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. That's blasttheradio.com.
It's time to dive into the stories that truly matter.